Good morning, everybody. I'm going to call this meeting of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order February 8th, 2022. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. The committee legislative assistant, please take the roll.
Thank you. Chair Nelson.
I'm here, present.
Chair Nelson is present. Vice Chair Carlson.
Carlson's present.
Vice Chair Carlson is present. Representative Nash.
Nash, present.
Representative Nash is present. Representative Bonner. Representative Bonner. Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski is present. Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Representative Elkins is present. Representative Greenman.
Present.
Representative Greenman is present. Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn is present. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick present.
Representative Kosnick is present. Representative Mason.
Mason present.
Representative Mason is present. Representative New Brindley.
Brindley present.
Representative New Brindley is present. Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski present.
Representative Pawlowski is present. Representative Quam.
Present.
Representative Quam is present. Representative Boehner.
Present.
Representative Boehner is present. With that, Chair Nelson, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Brinks. The next item on our agenda is the approval of the minutes from February 3rd, 2022. Representative Claiborne, you want to approve the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes for approval.
Motion has been made to approve the minutes for February 3rd. All in favor, please unmute and say aye.
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 Opposed? Our minutes have been approved. This meeting this morning, representatives, we're going to give a presentation from the governor's staff on their supplemental budget requests. And we'll start out with the Department of Minnesota, the Management and Budget. Commissioner Showalter, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget, and really appreciate the chance to introduce myself, my team, and give you an overview of our recommendations for the State Government Committee today. It's been a long and wild year, and before I go any further, I just want to make sure I introduce some of the changes that have happened in MMB, including our Deputy Commissioner, Britta Ray Tong. Had been previously Assistant Commissioner of State Budget Director, and with the retirement of Ryan Church, she has moved over to Deputy Commissioner, and she'll be a frequent guest of the committee and will be doing the presentation of our recommendations today. I also wanted to note that Laura Lane, who was a frequent guest for the committee last year, has moved to California, and so we are lucky to get Kevin McHenry, who is a seasoned hand and experienced a government professional to come into MMB, and he'll be filling that governmental relations role for us as well. Paul Moore, our CFO, continues unabated, and we're grateful for that. So, we've done a lot of challenges, a lot of work with making sure we get the best use and maximize federal funds. We can tell you much more about that in the future. But with that, I'm going to just turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Ray Tong, and we're going to walk through some of the recommendations and initiatives that we have for you this year. I think Paul will provide the slides, Amanda.
Again, welcome to the committee, Mr. Tong, and please state your name for the tape.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. My name is Britta Ray Tong. I'm Deputy Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to walk through our request today. I'm going to go in greater detail through the sustainable funding request for our statewide ERP system. That is the first request we're going to walk through today. And this one's a bit more complex. So I have a number of detailed slides on this item. So we are seeking funding to stabilize and sustain our state's ERP system. This is our enterprise resource planning system. And Paul, if you'll go to the next slide. This slide really gives you a sense of the broad scope of these systems. It's really a suite of systems that really support the critical business functions of state government. And these systems are housed at MMB and run by MMB in collaboration with Minute. I do want to highlight that this proposal has been developed in close collaboration with Minute. I know Deputy Commissioner Eichten and Commissioner Tomes are also in this meeting today and can also speak to their support for this proposal. I also have with me Bruce Urich, who is our Chief Business Technology Officer from Minute at MMB, and he has also been very much involved in crafting this proposal. So this first slide just shows the broad scope of our ERP systems. We also, in the statute, sometimes refer to these as our statewide systems. Essentially, these systems support all of our financial transactions through SWIFT, our statewide integrated financial tools. We call that system SWIFT. All of our accounting transactions, all of our financial reporting happens through that system. Semaphore is our HR, payroll, benefits system. That is also part of our statewide ERP. And then we have a data warehouse, which houses all our current and historical data and allows us to do reporting out of the system. And then also we have our enterprise learning management system as well. So all of these are part of our statewide systems or our state ERP systems, and that's what we're talking about today. Paul, if you'll go to the next slide. This slide provides another sense of just the broad scope of these systems. We're essentially through these systems processing $45 billion in revenues and expenditures every year. We're making 2.9 million in payments to vendors with over 100,000 vendors accessing the system. All of our employees are accessing these systems for payroll and HR purposes. And then over 700,000 reports for agency management out of our data warehouse. There's also some other data here, but just giving you a sense of the vast scope of these systems. If you'll turn to the next slide, Paul. The issue that we're dealing with right now is that we don't currently have a sustainable funding model for the operations and maintenance of our state ERP system. We spend annually approximately $22 million to operate and maintain these systems. By law, there's a statewide systems billing account in law, and that authority is capped at $10 million a year. So we can bill other state agencies up to $10 million a year to support these systems. So on an annual basis, our costs are about $22 million. There's some fluctuation based on the upgrades that need to happen in any given year, but $22 million approximately per year, and we can charge $10 million per year, which means that MMB relies on a variety of other funding sources to pay for the remaining costs. For example, we use about $7 million a year of our general fund resources to support our statewide systems. We also rely on Odyssey requests. So these are those requests that come at the end of a fiscal year when we have resources remaining, and we put in a request to the legislature to be allowed to carry those funds forward for system support and for system projects. And in the last biennium, we had about $1.5 million in Odyssey funds that we spent to support our systems. And then the other thing I really want to note is, so we can by law charge $10 million per year to other agencies through our statewide systems billing account. We did have a balance that accrued in that fund the earlier 2000s and 2010s. And we have been spending that down in recent years because our costs exceed the resources that we have available. So we can charge $10 million per year, but we've also been spending against the accrued balance in the fund. And that's why we're really at this critical tipping point with our funding for statewide systems. And the next slide will show more detail about that. So this slide looks at our statewide systems billing account specifically. So this is the account where we can bill $10 million per year to other agencies and state government. So whereas the slide before was an annual view of our spend, this is a biennial view of our statewide systems account. So that's an important distinction that I want to make sure is clear. So what this is showing is that in a biennium, we can charge $20 million. So that's that revenues line shows that we can charge the $20 million per biennium to other agencies. The expenditures line shows that we have been spending over and above that because we had accrued balance in that fund. And so you can see structurally, we've been spending beyond the resources that come in any given biennium. So we have a negative structural balance in 18-19 of a little over 5 million, in nearly 4 million in 20 and 21. And so what this means is we've been drawing down that balance in the statewide systems account. And you can see in the 22-23 biennium that spending in excess of revenues in a given biennium continues, but the beginning balance has been depleted over time. And so we don't have enough resources to continue to spend at the $25 million per biennia that the chart shows. And this is why we're really at this critical tipping point where we don't have enough billing authority or other resources to support our systems at the level required. Paul, if you'll turn to the next slide. So in the past, we have made requests of the legislature to support our growing ERP costs. And I want to take a minute to just talk about what's driving our growing ERP costs. So really, the maintenance and upgrade schedule has changed over time. So we are in an environment now in terms of the cybersecurity risks and the risks to the systems of this magnitude where we're continually doing patches and upgrades to make sure that the systems are safe. That continual patching and upgrading means that we have a significant amount of staff that are dedicated to this work between M&B and Minute. But this makes sure our systems stay secure and reliable. And so we wanna make sure that we're continuing with that upgrade schedule. But what this chart shows is that we have been requesting funds from the legislature over the past few legislative sessions. Typically, we have not received the level that we have requested, and in many cases, far below the level we have requested. And I just want to make clear that these numbers shown here are over the four-year budget horizon. So it's the total of the request in both the biennium we were budgeting for and the biennium beyond, which is usually how budget requests are presented. Paul, if you turn to the next slide. So really, what is the problem? So currently, if we don't receive additional funding to support our statewide systems, we will not be able to maintain the maintenance schedule and upgrade schedule that we currently are on, meaning that our systems will not be maintained and upgraded as they should. That leads to both risks with security and risks with performance. And these are certainly systems that are core to all the operations of state government. So we don't want to have either security risks or performance risks. The other issue we're dealing with is that we don't have resources to enhance the system. And there are additional business needs that agencies have identified that would help in terms of making their business processes more efficient. So requests for enhancements to our systems. Because we're lacking in resources, we have not been able to do those enhancements, which often means that agencies will make their own subsystems in order to meet those needs. And that's just simply inefficient when we have agencies building subsystems separate that could be leveraged at an enterprise level. All of this really just leads to higher costs in the long term. Paul, if you'll turn to the next slide. So the solution we're presenting today is a request for funding on a one-time basis to really stabilize our systems. There's a request for $6.3 million in 2023 and $17.9 million in 24 and 25. That addresses the funding gap that was shown on that earlier slide, but it also provides resources to upgrade our data warehouse. If you remember back to that slide where I broke out the components of our statewide systems, the data warehouse, which houses all of our data, both HR and financial data, and allows for reporting out of the system, that data warehouse has not had a significant upgrade since the system was put in place about a decade ago. So it is the one system that we have not been able to had the resources to upgrade. And frankly, it's showing at this point in terms of the performance of the system. So this funding stabilizes that gap in funding for our systems beginning in 23, as well as provides resources for that data warehouse update. So that's really the short-term part of the solution, is to provide general fund dollars to address that gap and upgrade the warehouse. Longer term, our proposal is to eliminate the cap on the statewide systems billing account, which would allow MMB to bill agencies an amount sufficient to support the statewide systems beyond the current biennium and the next. As part of this, we would also establish an advisory group of state agencies that would advise on the amount of the billing, as well as whether we need to do any enhancements to our systems and the service that they're getting. So making sure that billing happens collaboratively with the agencies that use the system, and they are advising on what they are paying for. Paul, if you'll turn to the next slide. This slide just really provides a breakdown of how this funding request totals together. So as I mentioned, we would be addressing the funding gap in our statewide systems account. The $1.3 million that you see in 2023 ties back to that earlier slide showing the gap in the statewide systems account. That gap, of course, grows into 24 and 25 because we don't have any balance carrying forward to offset that need in 24 and 25. The data warehouse is another key component. The upgrade of that system is another key component of the request. That will be a project that would happen over a few years. So you can see the costs of that upgrade project broken out between 23 and then in 24 and 25. And then in addition to just meeting the gap and funding the data warehouse upgrade, we're also requesting funds to add to our capacity to do the upgrades to the systems. As I mentioned, the pace of the upgrades and the patching has increased over time, but we want to make sure that we're continuing to be able to implement all of that comes out so that our systems are current and secure. If you turn to the next slide, Paul. So really the vision here is that with our shorter term request for general fund dollars, we would like to bring all of our systems into supported status so that we're really stabilizing the systems that we currently have, addressing the reliability and security of the systems. Going forward, we would be working with our agency partners to identify present and future needs and really building out a roadmap for the future of our ERP systems. That will allow us to think about also what comes next beyond this current iteration of our ERP. And that obviously continues to kind of cycle this process of learning and then transforming our systems to make sure we're effectively meeting business needs and doing so efficiently. Paul, if you'll turn to the next slide. So what I wanna highlight as well, there was an Office of the Legislative Auditor report in 2018 that highlighted that MMB does not have a reliable and sustainable source of funding for our ERP system. In addition to that, MMB has worked with an external consultant, Barry Dunn, to look at our existing funding models and our lack of sustainable funding for our systems. Their recommendation supports our longer-term strategy here, which was to eliminate the cap on the statewide systems billing account and then bill the full cost of maintaining the systems to agencies based on the metrics of how they use those systems. And then turning to the last slide on this topic, I just want to highlight that this is also in line with the Blue Ribbon Council on Information Technology and the report that they have issued in 2020, as well as part of the ongoing conversations of the TAC. There has been a lot of conversation about the state needing consistent, long-term, and predictable IT funding so that we can manage our systems in a sustainable way going forward. Chair, I can pause here. That is the full presentation on the ERP requests that we have. We have a number of other budget requests, but I want to make sure I take questions on this one before moving on.
I've got three hands up here right now. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tan, this is an excellent presentation and kind of confirmed some of my worst fears about this stuff. So as Chair Nelson knows, every time we balance our budget by giving all of our agencies a 10% IT cost haircut across the board, it lights my hair on fire. And this kind of highlights exactly why that's the case. So the one bullet, the point that really jumped out at me as an IT guy in this presentation is the bullet where it said, bring all systems to quote unquote supported status with the vendors. So what that tells me is that while it's not usually necessary when you have an integrated system, commercial off-the-shelf software package like the Oracle PeopleSoft systems that we use as our primary platform here. But if you keep putting off the patches over and over again, eventually you're so far behind on supplying the patches that the software vendor says, hey, you guys need to bring yourself up to the current version, or we're not providing you with support anymore because your system is so outdated and the problems you're seeing are as a result of you're not applying the patches. So, and this is what I've been worrying about all along. So I view this request as essential. We need to keep our systems, these are our mission critical systems for state government. We need to keep them in a state of good repair, to borrow an infrastructure term. It means we need to keep up with the patches that are being and upgrades that are being supplied by the vendor. And especially the security patches need to be applied right away. And so Minute and MMB need to be adequately financed to be able to keep these systems maintained in good working order and secure. The other thing that happens when you postpone the point releases along the way is that when it comes time where a major release comes along, you can't support it. You can't make that jump easily from the old release of the previous version you're on until the next version until you applied those cumulative patches on the old system. So starving an agency's ability to maintain its key ERP systems like this really is penny wise and pound foolish. So I would strongly support this budget request. And a question I would have would be, I assume that if we raise the chargeback limits above $10 million, that MMB will, of course, be reaching out to the other agencies so that when they submit their budget request for the next budget cycle, those additional chargeback amounts are reflected in their request to us and the other budgeting committees as well. And that be broadly committed also to the other finance chairs so that they expect that the baseline request for the related end agencies will be built into the baseline budgets next year when we go through the budget cycle again. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Rutan, do you?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I just want to, Mr. Representative Elkins, I just want to thank you for that question because I meant to say that, and I missed that talking point. So, yes, we will be increasing the billing to other agencies under this request, but in the 26-27 biennium, and that allowing that additional runway before we do that billing increase is really intentional so that we can, one, determine in partnership with the agencies what that level of billing should be, but two, also allow time to build that into the operating requests for that biennium so that agencies can be adequately funded to, in fact, pay those bills to support the systems.
Thank you.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I served on the Blue Ribbon twice and serve on the Technology Advisory Committee and work in technology for my day job. And oftentimes my side of the aisle will be criticized for saying, or is known for saying, oh, we're not going to spend money on this. We're not going to spend money on this. And I'm not opposed to this acquisition because I do recognize that large organizations around the planet and government agencies do need to stay current on technology. But Ms. Rutan, you might remember the conversation we had about the ERP when you called me and we had a Zoom briefing. I had asked you about what this leads to streamlining employee acquisition and the number of headcount that we might be able to avoid moving forward, because when you modernize IT and you bring out a new ERP or a new piece of software that's an enterprise piece of software, you should be able to expect a streamlining of headcount because so many, as you had pointed out, are having to do more work to make the current piece of software operable. So that's one of the questions that I have is, to get back to the question that I had when we were meeting, what sort of labor savings are we looking at across all agencies? Because a properly deployed ERP is going to create efficiencies that we don't currently have. So I'm very curious as to what you're able to give me on that answer. So, and I'll have other questions, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
Chair Nelson, Representative Nash, I want to be clear. What we're asking for here is to adequately fund the existing system. And so we're not talking about deploying a new ERP system at this point in time. That may be part of the more longer term strategy as we look to transform our ERP. But in the current request, what we're asking for is funding to adequately maintain our existing Oracle PeopleSoft system in the short term, at least, going forward, potentially having a more transformational approach to the ERP system. But at this point, that is not part of this request.
Representative Nash.
Well, that's not as I had understood it, so maybe we crossed our wires. I had been of the mind that you were looking at eventually getting onto an off-ramp from PeopleSoft. But so we'll go to the next question. The question that I would have is, once you get all other agencies onto this, what sort of efficiencies are we expecting out of that?
Commissioner?
Again, Representative Nash, agencies are currently on these systems. What we're dealing with currently is that we don't have an adequate funding source to do the maintenance and operations that are required of the systems in terms of patching and upgrades across all of our systems. What we've done in recent years is really focus on upgrades to most of our systems, but what we've seen is we haven't been able to, for example, update the data warehouse. And so it's kind of a situation where in order to meet the needs of Swift and Semaphore, we're starving another system because we don't have adequate resources to do the maintenance and updates across the full suite of systems. So all agencies are currently using our statewide systems. We just don't have an adequate funding stream to maintain them as we should.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, we'll take this offline because I don't believe this is going to get a thumbs up or thumbs down in today's committee hearing. And we'll all be bringing this up in the next technology advisory committee. I'll take it to another day. It's the opacity has just gone up a little bit. Thank you.
Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Deputy Commissioner, I was curious on, do you have runs or estimates of the charges to other departments if this cap was lifted? And if you do have those, can you share those with us and forward them to us?
Deputy Commissioner.
Representative Koznick, we certainly have runs of the $10 million that we currently bill. With increases in the billing amount, it would likely impact agencies similarly to how they're currently billed, just at a higher dollar value. But we can certainly share the $10 million runs with you so you can see how it impacts each agency.
Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think it would, in making this request, you would have some indication of where, of what the effect would be of raising this cap. And I guess I'm curious, and I think it would be important to know who's going to be kicking in more money from this and out of what departments, so that we can have an idea of the impact of raising that cap, if that's in fact what we're going to do. So if you could work on that and forward that to us, I'd be curious to know what departments and areas are going to be charged more, obviously for higher usage, but it's important for us to know who's going to be paying if we do raise that cap that you are requesting. Thank you.
Certainly.
Deputy Commissioner. Representative Elkins, and excuse me, Representative Druskowski. I've seen the Steve and it's confusing me. Representative Druskowski.
We all look the same, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, when I just see the name, that's what that's, it's like, okay, there's two Steves and I got to remember that.
I got you. No problem. Deputy Commissioner, thank you for your presentation. What type of decrease in FTEs can we see because of the efficiencies that this will bring forward?
Deputy Commissioner.
Representative Druskowski, I want to be clear that I do think we can move towards a broader conversation of our next iteration of our ERP. This request is really focused on stabilizing our current ERP system. So there isn't an FTE reduction associated with this request.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. Not really what I was hoping to hear. As a matter of fact, that's been my experience with government generally since I've been in the legislature. Government comes forward and asks for requests that they pitch to the legislature as increasing efficiencies, and then they don't decrease the size of government in order to match the size of government to the now more efficient systems that we do have. It never, ever happens, and that's what we're hearing from you, Deputy Commissioner. There isn't an intent on government to do this. I would ask you, Deputy Commissioner, to come back to the legislature, because I don't think the Senate is going to go for this, but come back to the legislature and actually show us where the efficiencies are with a commitment to properly decrease and properly right-size government in order to match that new environment. And on top of that, I would just suggest, Mr. Chair, government is fully funded between now and June 30th of 2023. These decisions were made last year, and I would hope the Deputy Commissioner and others that are coming before our committee today would bring their proposals next year when the proper time is for us to reconsider yet the next biennium. Government is fully funded. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mason, and members, I would just remind you we've got six other presentations, and I believe this one's not complete. So if we can keep our questions short and so we can move on And we'll have plenty of time when the bills are in front of us to debate these further in the future. Representative Mason.
Thank you very much. And to the last comment, the fact that we have not been funding them at the rate that they were asking, to me, is pretty scary. But the question I have is, you had said this current system is about 10 years old at this point. So at what point in the future do you think a major rehab or whatever change you think will be needed?
Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Mason. I do think we need to start exploring what comes next. We do know that our PeopleSoft product will be supported for at least another until 2030, I believe. Our CBTO is on, if he wants to correct me on that. But we are beginning that conversation about what is the ERP system that comes next. And I think that is really where we can get more into that question around, is there a more efficient way to run a statewide ERP system? I also want to just highlight quickly that this request is really about security and performance of the system. We want to make sure that this system that is the backbone of financial transactions and HR transactions in state government is both secure and performing as it needs to support all of the transactions that are occurring in state government.
Thank you.
Representative Bonner, and Representative Bonner and Quam, and then we're going to go continue with the presentation. If we don't get this done, we may have to line up an evening meeting, and I'll have to figure out when we can get that from leadership. So members, this is an overview of these, and I know we're going to have many more questions as this, when the bills come out, but we need to start getting moving along here. This is just the first part of the first presentation. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, and I'll try to be succinct. I just want to try to kind of cut through a little bit of what we're talking about here today for some of my colleagues and have that larger discussion. I want to thank Ms. Rattan for doing an excellent job of trying to sort of set the stage for us and explain to us what's happening here. But what MMB is very politely trying to tell all of us is that we have critical systems to the functioning of government that we are not adequately supporting, we are not adequately paying for, and we are not sharing the cost of that maintenance with other agencies who use these critical services. These are services we cannot run without. And what they're also very politely telling you is at the end of the day, when they can't meet the nut, right, they can't pay for it all, that they're scrounging around looking for other funding sources to fill the gaps. That's what they're telling you. And I just want to be really crystal clear on that point, because this isn't about, well, you know, maybe you should have cut a couple FTEs here or a few FTEs there. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about essential systems that are needed to run the state. And so this is not an issue of just a couple snipping here, snipping there. And we know in recent years, we've seen an incredible increase in things like cybersecurity attacks. We saw what happened down in Atlanta when they shut down the city government and could not muster core functions of the government. We cannot afford to have that happen, folks. And so just to be really crystal clear, maintaining these systems at an adequate level is not just a nice request, it is vital to the functioning of our state government. As charges of the budget, as charges of the state of Minnesota, we cannot fail in that duty. And so I just want to be very clear about what Ms. Rattan is trying to very politely tell us, and we're not quite maybe following in line or understanding what she's saying, but I just want to cut through it and be clear about what she's trying to tell us. For that reason, I do really appreciate, Ms. Rattan, that you're taking the time to come and explain this to us. I know it can be complicated. I know it's a difficult subject to broach, and this is not a conversation we want to have. But in the Blue Ribbon Commission, the TAC, and the LCC, one of the top priorities that we have is how we make sure that we are adequately funding and having a stable and reliable source for funding our IT systems across government, that we're securing our assets and our critical infrastructure. And I know, despite the earlier comments, I do know that my colleagues on the other side of the aisle actually agree with that stance. And so we will have to have more discussions on this topic, but thank you for being patient with us and explaining it. I appreciate it.
Representative Quam, succinctly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in order to try and more crystal clearly understand the evolution of this, MMB, the upgrades, and et cetera, it'd be nice if in the future we would have a history of the FTE, the efficiencies that were brought in, the savings, because we have made major, transitions from heavy iron that we've got to, more of the 21st century IT and support structure. And then also an idea of how we're leveraging, because if we got some internal cloud and some other stuff, some of the outside entities that are very good at, I've been to the Seattle cybersecurity area and seen, with Microsoft and some of the other, if we don't have the critical mass to do something, what are we looking at to leverage those things? But if we've got the last 5 years, what has the efficiency been? That helps us to understand what this investment will gain us in the future. And I think a lot of people are saying we keep throwing money in there, but we're not seeing the efficiencies that the real world tends to see. And we've got lots of people, both sides of the aisle, with some real world background. So give us the data so we can better understand, instead of, asking these questions and we don't have the data in front of us. Thank you.
Well, I don't want to mention it. I think on my mind, what I'm hearing here is if we don't keep these systems up, we could end up with another Minlar situation where our systems are so out of date that we could end up in a big mess.
Mr. Chair, I was around when we were doing the Minlar stuff, and it wasn't out of date. It was a new system that we approached in a less than intelligent manner, and mistakes were made. And that's why we have the oversight, is to avoid going down the wrong path. And this additional information may assist us in going down the correct path. Thank you.
I understand that, Representative Quam, but Minlar was built, was set up to replace an old system that hadn't been upgraded for a number of years, and that's how we could end up in another system, another situation like that. Deputy Commissioner, do you have a further presentation, or are you complete?
I am complete on that topic, Chair Nelson, but we have more budget requests for MMB. I will try to go through them much more quickly than this first one. And Paul, do you have this? Is the deck still visible to others? It's not still visible to me.
I think it's been pulled down.
Yeah, Paul Moore, could you put the slide deck back up for our remaining requests? Thank you, Paul. So if I might, Mr. Chair, I'll move to our next funding request. And this is a request for additional funds to support evaluating impact of state investments. This would support additional FTEs in our results management group at MNB. This work has really been, has received bipartisan support in recent years. And this group is looking at, or what they are doing is rigorous evaluations of state investments to really understand what works and what is getting the desired outcomes for the participants in the programs and for taxpayers. The results program at MMB is really nation leading and gets a lot of recognition for the work that they are doing to really look at, are we getting value out of our state investments? And so these funds would allow that group to do additional evaluations each year. I want to highlight that based on the economies of scale of this team, we are able to do this work at a lower cost than if we were to contract out the work to do evaluations of our state programs. And I also have Weston Merrick here with me from our results management team, who leads this impact evaluation unit, if there's any further questions about this proposal.
And seeing no hands popping up, proceed, Ms. Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. This next request is for funding to support additional outreach and assistance on the capital budget. This request would fund two additional FTEs at MMB, one in our debt management division and one in our budget services division. And the purpose of these new FTEs would be, again, to support that capital budget outreach and to provide technical assistance. So really with the intent of reaching communities and nonprofits that have traditionally been have not participated in the state capital process. It can be a really complicated process and difficult to understand. So there's some barriers to entry. So the debt management position would really do technical assistance to help organizations and communities understand the technical aspects of bonding. Whereas the budget position would do more outreach to community about the process. So just making more more communities, more nonprofits aware of the opportunities through the bonding process.
I see no hands popping up. Ms. Rutan, please continue.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This next request is to fund the Children's Cabinet staffing with general fund resources. So the Children's Cabinet is housed at MMB, and it coordinates work across state government to support issues impacting children. So education-related issues, childcare-related issues, mental health, other family and community supports. So we currently fund the Children's Cabinet staffing by billing other agencies. This general fund appropriation would provide ongoing funding for this function of the Children's Cabinet. It's really aligned with how this function is funded in other states. So essentially, this is switching the source from billing other agencies to providing general fund resources in order to operate the coordination efforts of the Children's Cabinet.
And I see one hand pop up. Representative Elkins.
Yeah, just very briefly, I'm familiar with this initiative and view it as a model of a cooperative data sharing among state agencies, one that can be looked to as an exemplar for other cases where agencies need to come together to share data to achieve a common goal. So I would, you know, just like to very strongly support funding this initiative.
Representative Bonner, I see your hand popped up.
Oh, sorry, that was actually a reaction, more of a lending of support.
Okay, thank you. Deputy Commissioner.
With that, I think I can go to our last request, and this is about the COVID-19 Emergency Response Fund. I want to be very clear that this is not resources to support MMB, the agency, like our other requests are, but this is a request for $500 million, $350 from the general fund, and $150 million from the ARP funds to provide additional funds for the COVID-19 emergency response. A similar fund was established at the end of last session, I remembered at that time hoping in my former role that we wouldn't really need to use it for pandemic response. And as we saw over the fall and winter months, the need for pandemic response this year was far greater than we would have anticipated when we put those dollars in place. And so a lot of those resources were used to stabilize the healthcare system, support testing and vaccination efforts, as well as supporting sheltering and rental assistance. Those funds that were appropriated in the last session have been depleted. And so this is a request to once again establish a $500 million fund for emergency response. This funding would operate in the same way as the previous pot of resources. So the request would go through the LCRC with briefings to the LCRC and feedback from the LCRC in advance of spending those dollars. I want to highlight that the blend of general fund and ARP funds is due to the fact that the governor's recommendation is for about $1 billion of the remaining ARP funds to be used for frontline worker pay. So the remainder after that initiative is taken from the ARP funds, and then the balance is made up with general fund resources.
I see no hands. Deputy Commissioner, continue, or are you complete?
Mr. Chair, this is my last slide, so I can just say thank you for taking the time with me today, and I am happy to follow up with any of the members about any of the proposals where there are more questions.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. And Representative or Commissioner Showalter, does that complete your portion?
Chair Nelson, he maybe had to hop off. So yes, I think it completes our portion for MMB.
Thank you. The next portion we have is the Department of Administration, Commissioner Alice Robert Davis. Commissioner, you identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Representative Nelson?
I'm here, Representative Roberts Davis. Is that your slide deck that's up now, or?
It is, Chair Nelson. I'm sorry, I was disconnected there for just a moment. I'm not sure what happened. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I am Alice Roberts Davis, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Administration. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to provide an overview of the governor's supplemental budget recommendations for the Department of Administration. Our agency has a wide-ranging set of responsibilities that ultimately touch every part of state government. Admin's duty is to help government best serve Minnesotans. We work primarily behind the scenes to provide business functions that are the administrative backbone for public agencies, and we do to a lesser extent provide direct services to Minnesota's residents. Our partners are internal to state government, and they rely on us to provide the critical core services that help keep them operating effectively. These services include overseeing the state's annual purchasing of $3 billion in goods and services. We manage its 6,200 state-owned buildings, 850 property leases, and more than 280 annual construction projects. We also manage a more than 2,000 vehicle fleet and $19.2 billion in insured state assets. If we were meeting in person today, you would also see our facilities maintenance crews who keep the state office building, state capitol, and other capitol complex buildings operational and clean. Admin's supplemental budget requests reflect our efforts to improve these services to our partners. First, the governor recommends $1.9 million in FY23 and $400,000 ongoing from the general fund for state procurement innovation and participation. This request covers the 35% state match to federal U.S. Department of Defense funds for the Procurement Technical Assistance Center, or PTAC. PTEC offers free counseling, education, training, and guidance for all Minnesota businesses who wish to sell their products and services to local, state, and federal governments. PTEC staff are geographically located throughout the state. This is because the ability to connect with local PTEC counselors makes contracting less intimidating and more accessible for all Minnesota business owners. To complement this work, a disparity study will examine whether there is evidence of discrimination that affects minority and women-owned businesses in the marketplace and assesses measures to address any such discrimination. Disparity studies are necessary to provide a legal basis for race and gender-based programs. The state collaborated with other local units of government to share the cost and information on the last disparity study, which was completed in 2017. Admin's intent would be to again partner with local entities to complete this work. As the information ages, it becomes less useful, and to best understand where inequities exist, disparities should be studied every 5 to 7 years. Next, the governor recommends $301,000 in FY23 and $198,000 ongoing from the general fund to improve human resources and financial services at admin. These funds would enhance the staff resources in our human resources and financial management offices to boost hiring and retention practices. Small agencies don't have the staff or capacity for human resources or financial services, so they rely on admin's Small Agency Resource Team, or SMART, to provide those services. Since 2019, the number of SMART partners served by admin's human resources and financial management divisions has doubled from 19 to 38. This proposal funds the capacity for admin to meet the increased demand for personnel and accounting services. Small agencies, boards, and councils currently served by SMART have structures and capacity constraints that make supplementary support in the areas of leadership, human resources, financial management, board support, and controls necessary in certain circumstances. These requests can sometimes go outside the bounds of the support the SMART program is currently designed to provide. The governor recommends studying a potential office of small agencies to address these needs. Next, the governor recommends $630,000 in FY23 from the general fund to address the revenue loss in the fleet fund. Admin's Fleet Services Division forecasts that decreases in fleet usage due to increased telework and virtual meetings will result in lower revenue in the fleet fund. Fewer vehicles will be replaced in fiscal year 2023 due to changes in work patterns resulting from the pandemic. This will cause a reduction in the vehicle lease revenue needed to pay for the Fleet Services Division's operating expenses. Based on our current analysis, it is anticipated that the enterprise fleet size may be reduced by as much as 12% by 2025. This request stabilizes the fund while admin continues improving the fleet with lower life cycle costs and greater fuel efficiency. The governor also recommends $400,000 in FY23 and ongoing from the general fund to improve grants administration oversight. This request funds the Office of Grants, the Office of Grants Management's full implementation of existing statute language. It will enable the office to drive innovation, develop alternative strategies, and foster collaboration across sections to improve grant administration and outreach. It will also establish a baseline understanding of the impact of current state agency practices and state-funded grants throughout Minnesota's communities. This includes an enterprise resource to assist state agencies with effectively implementing state-funded grants that focus on specific communities. It also provides dedicated staff for outreach and training to encourage and assist community groups in applying for state-funded grants. Additionally, the governor recommends a budget-neutral policy to enhance state grants administration with no new funds proposed. The initiative allows state agencies to retain for grant administration up to 5% of grant funds for new legislatively named grants and up to 10% for new competitively awarded grants. This change would ensure that all new grants have the minimal funds available to provide an appropriate level of service for grantees and protect the state's investment in the grant by ensuring compliance with state laws and policies. Next, the governor recommends $150,000 in FY23 and ongoing from the general fund to foster collaboration and resolve disputes. The Office of Collaboration and Dispute Resolution, or OCDR, uses collaborative processes, public engagement, and the science of human relations to help government and stakeholders develop wise and durable solutions to seemingly intractable issues. OCDR currently receives more requests for service than the office can accommodate, and the volume of requests steadily increases each year. These funds would support additional capacity to help OCDR meet the current demand for services from the state agencies, local governments, and the legislature. The governor recommends $200,000 in FY23 and ongoing from the general fund for field archaeology. These funds would implement an update to the Private Cemeteries Act. The proposed changes include modernizing terminology, clarifying authority over cemetery assessments, and requiring the Office of the State Archaeologist to maintain a database of cemetery locations. Terminology changes will more accurately define the places and processes described in statute. To strengthen the authority of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council over condition assessments of cemeteries deemed to be American Indian, the proposal clarifies their role and when to control the assessment. The legislation also specifies when the Office of the State Archaeologist will partner with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council on condition assessments. Additionally, the legislation will provide greater flexibility so qualified professionals and the appropriate experts can be utilized to assess or identify cemeteries. Implementing this proposal will require additional capacity in the Office of the State Archaeologist to handle condition assessments and coordination between entities. Funds will also be used to establish a database of all known or suspected cemeteries in Minnesota. Next, the governor recommends eliminating the $200 fee for open meeting law advisory opinions. Minnesota statutes gives the Commissioner of Administration permissive authority to issue non-binding advisory opinions on data practices and the open meeting law. The Data Practices Office administers this process for the commissioner. Currently, anyone who wants to request an advisory opinion about compliance with the open meeting law pays the $200 fee. However, advisory opinions about data practices issues are free to everyone. For consistency, the governor recommends eliminating the $200 fee for open meeting law opinion requesters. Admin can absorb the anticipated lost revenue from this change, which is estimated to be less than $1,000 each year. The governor recommends $1.306 million in FY23 and $1,159,000 ongoing to establish the Office of Enterprise Translations. This office would translate written materials for state agencies in Spanish, Hmong, and Somali in a timely manner. The proposal also creates a fund for agencies to access for additional languages or when more technical expertise is needed. The office would also provide language-specific web pages with links to translated materials on state agency websites. The ability to consistently and effectively provide information is a challenge that state government must meet in order to effectively serve all Minnesotans. For many programs that receive federal funding, providing translated materials is mandatory, yet the state is not addressing these requirements at an enterprise level. Without financial resources provided specifically for translation, agencies are left with the difficult choice between directing funds to their core operations and the translation of key materials. When translation services are contracted with external vendors, at times the services can be too slow to be useful for agencies and public needs. Access to quality translations would enable agencies to provide necessary information to all Minnesotans. And finally, we are carrying this item on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Public Education Radio Stations, or AMPRS. The governor recommends a $773,000 grant in FY23 from the General Fund for the AMPRS Community Radio News Service. This is a one-time request. The funds will be used to create and distribute daily 5-minute newscasts, a weekly 30-minute newscast, and weekly newscasts in Hmong, Somali, and Spanish. The newscast will provide information in diverse perspectives from within the communities, which isn't readily available from traditional media sources. The Community News Project will share the voices and stories of Minnesota's BIPOC, rural, and disability communities. The Department of Administration will administer this grant. That completes my overview of the governor's supplemental budget requests for admin. Thank you for your time today, and I will stand for any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions? And I don't see any hands jumping up. Thank you, Commissioner. The next person on the list, or the next department on the list, is Minnesota IT Services. And I have Commissioner Tomes. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape.
Good morning, Chair Nelson and members. Really excited to be here. For the record, my name is Tarek Tomes, and I am the Chief Information Officer and Commissioner of Minnesota IT Services, and really appreciative. Thank you for having us here today to present the governor's recommended change items. We're incredibly excited to share them with you, and really are incredibly confident that they will help move technology forward for the state of Minnesota. When we think about, just want to present a couple of slides as an introduction for a minute, and then we'll tag team this with Deputy Commissioner John Eichten. Next slide, Brandon. From a organizational perspective, technology plays an incredibly important role in providing state services, and we have certainly seen the world over and in the United States the critical role that technology has played, really highlighted and accentuated in the last couple of years during this pandemic, and certainly state government similarly has followed patterns. 300,000 Minnesotans were able to renew their driver's licenses online, record number of people attending state parks and paying via payless systems, 50 million logins to our unemployment insurance system. Over the last decade, Minnesota IT Services really as the internal technology organization for the executive branch of state government has looked to set a course to help the state realize how we can use technology to be an innovative force to really form the most innovative digital government that works for everyone. Minnesota, we partner actively to provide secure, reliable solutions to improve the lives of all Minnesotans, and within that, we certainly set strategy and direction and policies for the enterprise and beyond at times as it relates to a critical role that we play from a cybersecurity perspective. Next slide, Brandon. Just a quick view as it relates to just numbers at a glance. Within Minnesota IT Services, we have approximately 2,400 employees that support over 35,000 employees in the executive branch of state government, and really have supported them in very unique ways, obviously, over the last couple of years. And we're incredibly proud of the work that we have done to transform a workforce that is able to work in a hybrid and a remote and in office manner while continuing to provide services at a high level. We also support services throughout Minnesota, counties, cities, schools, with the network services and cybersecurity services that we provide. Together with our enterprise security office and our chief information security officer, Rohit Tandon, our chief technology officer for the state of Minnesota, Jeff Nyberg, the head of our transformation office, Zarina Bobber, Deputy Commissioner John Eichten, and all of the CBTOs, we support and look to evolve the 2800 line of business applications that really power the business of government and the executive branch, if you will, at over 1,300 locations. We oversee and manage approximately 300 projects at any given time that have a really transformative opportunity to not only serve people better, but also serve people more efficiently to really bring the best of technology innovation service opportunities by really thinking how we can serve people where they are and really aligning our services, keeping people always centered with the solutions that we provide. As you see from the funding slide, general fund-wise, we receive approximately 1% of our total funding from the general fund. Technology within the executive branch and beyond, how Minute is funded is approximately a little shy of $650 million, largely chargeback services, and only 1% of that is generally funded. Next slide. So the change items that we're bringing forward today are really needed to address some opportunities as a collective, not so much minute focused, but really profoundly impactful for the entirety of the executive branch and beyond, with a reach and a touch certainly for all of Minnesota, whether it's cities, counties, tribal nations, or otherwise. I want to take a moment really just to read what we, you know, really perceive as the statement that ties together our supplemental budget ask, the governor's recommendation. Aging technology increases cyber and operational risk and makes it more challenging for Minnesotans to access services. Modernizing technology via cloud service platforms will reduce risk, improve resilience, and transform Minnesotans' experience when interacting with state government. And as we end up going through the different supplemental budget items, I just would like for you to keep that problem statement in mind, because they really all holistically tie back together. Together with each of you, and a huge appreciation, we have collectively certainly invested in cybersecurity. And we have improved our ability to defend and respond, but building bigger walls in and of itself won't protect us. We have to leverage cloud services where we will only pay for the things that we use. And we have to make sure that we improve service areas where there is significant technical debt, not just to remove that technical debt and improve our risk posture, but to make sure that those services are provided in a more efficient and effective manner to meet Minnesotans where they are. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Deputy Commissioner John Eichten, who will walk through the individual supplemental budget items.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Eichten. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is John Eichten. I'm Minnesota IT Services Deputy Commissioner. I'll walk through the change items here. I know we're pressed for time, so I'll move quickly but try to cover all the ground here. The first change item is related to targeted application modernization. So as the commissioner mentioned, the state faces a significant amount of IT debt resulting from the development of applications over the last several decades that now stand in need of modernization and replacement. These applications, they create risk in our environment. That risk not only impacts the agencies who rely on a particular application, but really creates risk for the whole of the executive branch. The funding proposed in this change item would enable a much more systematic, strategic approach to the modernization of at-risk aging applications amongst those that 2,800 plus application portfolio. There are really several benefits to taking a systematic enterprise approach to application modernization. Number one, we'll be able to address application vulnerabilities that contribute to the state's cybersecurity risk level and that create doors for cyber actors to enter and move laterally in our environment to potentially steal data and really wreak operational havoc, as was mentioned previously in the hearing in places like Atlanta and Maryland. We'll also be able to standardize applications on commercially available platforms so we can reduce the complexity of our environment, complexity that has really resulted from the internal development of custom applications over many decades. We'll improve the reliability of these applications and reduce their ongoing run costs in the future by modernizing them and ultimately moving them into a cloud services environment, as we'll touch on in the next change item. And leveraging recommendations from the Blue Ribbon Council, what's now the Technology Advisory Council, we'll also be able to take the opportunity of the IT system modernization effort to advance the redesign and modernization of the service delivery processes that these IT systems support, the business processes that rely on this technology. So this is an opportunity to reimagine the way these applications serve people and to really enable the kinds of digital experiences that Minnesotans expect and increasingly have come to expect, especially during the pandemic, when interacting with their state government, an expectation that aligns to, you know, their interactions with commercial providers and websites and service providers in their regular life.
For this work, MNIT is requesting $5.25 million in the 22-23 biennium and an additional $14.625 million in the 24-25 biennium. This, again, would be a pool of dollars available for application modernization, and we would, in the FY23 fiscal year, be developing essentially a competitive process for agencies to apply and make, you know, merit-based data-focused cases for why certain applications really merit prioritization for modernization. These funds will not modernize the full 2,000 plus application portfolio. It will be a many years journey to address the accrued IT debt that the state faces, but it will enable us to take a much more systematic approach to doing so. With the next slide, I just want to kind of paint a picture of what this potentially looks like using an example from the Department of Human Services. So on the left-hand side here, you have what was ApplyMN, which was essentially a portal that Minnesotans could use to apply for various DHS cash food heating assistance programs. It took about an hour to move through the application process online. As you can see on the left, it was not what you'd call a mobile-friendly experience, so it would be very challenging to do this on a phone or a tablet computer. And there was no ability to, you know, upload necessary documentation that would be needed to support your application. On the right-hand side, you see what has now replaced ApplyMN, which is called MN Benefits. It reduced that application period down to 15 minutes. It enables document upload via the camera on your phone, which is obviously a much better citizen experience. And it's resulted in quite high user satisfaction scores. There's actually a tool at the end that asks the citizen to rate their experience. It's got very positive remarks. And I think the most telling thing I heard about MN Benefits actually came from Deputy Commissioner Chuck Johnson at DHS, who said in his decades of working for the Department of Human Services, he can't think of a single thing that they've done that brought about more positive feedback and praise from the counties, who really rely on this tool now to help their county residents apply for benefits much more easily and much more rapidly. So it just gives you a picture of what this pool of dollars could help support in many agencies across the executive branch when we bring modern technology to bear with human-centered designed user experiences. And this just gives you a picture of some of the feedback that was received around the MN Benefits tool. As you can see down bottom in the middle there, I'm 76 and completed the application without difficulty, very user-friendly, not a ton of text to wade through, and that really speaks to that human-centered design user experience. So moving ahead, transition to the second change item, which is related to the first one in that if you think of the systems that we rely on at the state, the Gentech system, the Swift system, MinDrive, these are applications that live on top of infrastructure, so servers, data centers that we operate. And what we're proposing to do in the second change item is really rapidly transition away from on-prem hosting, so data centers that are managed here in the state of Minnesota with state staff and vendor partners involved in that on-prem hosting, but move to a public cloud service construct as rapidly as possible. And to do that, to really enable MNIT and our business partners to realize several important benefits for the state and for Minnesotans. Cloud services come with built-in resiliency and disaster recovery capabilities. They come with scalable security capabilities that would significantly improve our cybersecurity posture. They come with innovative cloud services that are not available within physical data centers, things like data lakes, data analysis tools that really come as a package with a cloud service provider. Opportunities to identify operational efficiencies and speed innovation, remove friction points, and ultimately, over the long term, to realize cost avoidance related to the operation of state systems in a cloud environment. This will allow us to further reduce the state's data center footprint. We've made a great deal of progress, but as the private sector has been doing for many years, the future of IT is really in a cloud environment. And we need to make that transition as quickly as possible to manage costs and realize the risk mitigation benefits, the resilience benefits that come with being in the cloud. To give you, just paint as clear a picture as possible, if you think of state data and systems as being housed currently in the state of Minnesota at one of the state data centers, what you get in the cloud is an immediate gain in terms of resilience and reliability because your systems and your data are replicated in data centers across the country with failover capability by design. So realizing that kind of resilience capability through on-premise hosting from a budget standpoint is just not feasible. Achieving that for the full suite of applications that the state houses, the cost would be enormous. It's really critical that we move into a cloud construct to realize those kind of capabilities and address the risk that we all know is increasing with evolving cyber threats really knocking at our door every day. There is a cost bubble that any organization is going to face to making this transition, though. You have to maintain your on-premise environment as you're building out the cloud environment. And so by making this investment, accelerating this transition, we can address that cost bubble for agencies and get them to a more capable and more cost-effective place in the future where, as the commissioner said previously, they're really using, paying for the infrastructure that they need, paying for an ability to scale that up and down as needed, and not paying for infrastructure that supports the peak period. You don't need to have infrastructure that supports, you know, the fall, winter period of unemployment insurance. You don't need to pay for that every month. You can pay for it for those peak periods and scale it down when allowed in the off-peak times. The last thing I wanted to mention here related to a cloud transition is this would really put the state in a much better position to respond to the need for rapid technology solutioning. So something we've seen throughout the pandemic. Events happen. IT systems are needed to be spun up to address that very rapidly. And operating in a cloud environment really enables you to do that much more effectively. And we saw that with the Department of Health throughout the pandemic response. They're the one agency that is really fully in a cloud environment. They were a leader in this space, and the Minute team there has been helping make this transition for years now. Had they not been in that environment, they wouldn't have had the ability to scale up the solutions to handle the volumes and loads that they were experiencing throughout the pandemic and to buttress some of their legacy systems to manage that. So for this work, Minute is requesting $14.5 million across two biennia. You can see it broken out there on the right. This will support additional workforce and professional technical assistance to support the transition and procure required software services and Microsoft licensing for cloud-based communications, collaboration, and low-code, no-code development tools. The next change item we want to touch on is the Cybersecurity Improvement Grant Program. This funding is part of this is the state match for the federal, state, local, tribal government cybersecurity grant program, as the feds call it. As this was discussed in a previous hearing, this program requires 80% of the total funding to be used on projects supporting cyber improvements for local government, with the remaining 20% available for state initiatives. The allocation of the funding would be guided by a cybersecurity planning committee, and that would incorporate representation from various levels of government. The guidelines for the program are still being developed by CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, but we know that these state matching dollars will be required to pull down the associated federal dollars. And with ransomware events on the rise, many of them targeting local government, we know this funding will be critical to help all levels of government combat these threats.
Move along here. We're running out of time.
Absolutely. The next one would change item number four, Mr. Chair, is related to the Children's Cabinet IT innovation. As was discussed previously, they are doing great work at advancing interagency initiatives, but one of the obstacles they run into is the need for interagency IT development work, IT systems work. This removes that barrier, creates an enterprise pool of dollars to target these innovation opportunities. As you know, Minnesotans don't really care which agency they're interacting with. They want to be able to access services in a streamlined, user-friendly way, and this pool of dollars will help support that kind of interagency service delivery capability. The next change item is related to application accessibility. This would fund an independent assessment of the executive branch applications and online services. We know we have gaps and opportunities to improve the accessibility of these tools for Minnesotans with disabilities. And this funding would be used for really the development of a roadmap to address those biggest opportunities and gaps that we have in our accessible technology environments. And the last change item is again related to the Office of Accessibility. This is non-general fund. This is the Telecommunications Access Minnesota Fund, and would address some operating budget pressures that we have on a very small team, enable them to continue to deliver the services they have without a drawdown in staff from the budget pressures related to salary increases, contractually obligated salary increases. Those are all the change items we have. I'll hand it back to the commissioner, if I could, Mr. Chair, to close us out.
Commissioner Tomes.
Thank you, John. And just real briefly, Chair Nelson, all of the things that the governor has recommended for our supplemental budget are really about people, how to serve people more effectively, more efficiently, and more resiliently. They aren't about buying capital equipment or building things, but really transformational opportunities. And we really have an opportunity to act now to really position our state for future success and significantly reduce our risk, the impact and consequences, as Representative Bonner has pointed out, for cyber disruptions to critical services that people rely on can be devastating. And we have a unique opportunity to really put the state on a course of a more resilient service delivery model for the future. With that, I'll conclude, Chair Nelson, and stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative or Commissioner Tomes. I don't see any hands, and unfortunately, the Historical Society, the Board of Competency, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, we're going to have you on another night. I'd like to get, we've got just a few minutes left. I'd like to get the Secretary of State to be able to do his presentation. So if we can hold questions and take them offline with the department, that would be helpful. Secretary Simon, if you want to quickly go, and we can get maybe run a few minutes late, but if you can get your presentation done quickly, we can go from there. Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. I will be very quick. I'm going old school, no PowerPoint, nothing like that. Thank you, members, for your time and attention and consideration. Just a quick reminder, as I do at every budget-related hearing, that our office generates more, far more revenue for the general fund than we cost. And that has been your decision, a legislative decision, about some of the fees that we charge. So we're actually a small profit center for the state. Two supplemental budget requests, two and only two, and the numbers are far, far lower than the ones that you've just heard. With all due respect, not to throw the Department of Administration under the bus, but these are very, very small. The first is one that you've seen before. The second is one that is new. The one you've seen before, left over from last year, is funding of a 1.0 FTE voter outreach staff member devoted to youth and civics education. This is very much a demand side request, not a supply side request. In other words, it's not us saying this is something that would be cool. This is our partners saying, we really need you guys to step up and do more of this. We work with high schools, we work with colleges, two-year, four-year, public, private. We work with 4-H, we work with the YMCA, we work with libraries. And there is no end to the demand for the services that we provide year in and year out when it comes to civic engagement and youth engagement. So this is coming from our partners saying, we need you guys to do more. And this is a $100,000 position that includes everything, that includes all the benefits and everything. The second request is something that's new, and I've discussed it with some of you, notably Representative Nash, who does this kind of stuff for a living, and that is that we really need to adopt a CIO model for our office IT needs. As IT infrastructure has become more complex generally, and in our office specifically, we really need that model. It was once the model in our office. When now Senator Mary Kiffmeyer was Secretary of State Kiffmeyer, she instituted a CIO position. My predecessor, Secretary Ritchie, went in a different direction in terms of organization. There's no crisis or problem. Things are working just fine right now, in a sense. But really, more and more, this kind of office, and secretaries of state generally have to move to a model where there is one person in charge of the major long-range IT decisions. It's been recommended to us time and time and again, and you can read for yourself what the numbers are. So this is something we once had as an office. We want to bring it back. We think it makes sense now more than ever. That's the presentation. Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your consideration.
And members, any quick questions of the Secretary of State? If not, we can have more questions when the budget bills come through, and I'm sure we're going to have more discussions at that time. Members, seeing no hands jumping up, just a reminder, our next meeting is Thursday, February 10th. We're probably going to be trying to find a time for an evening meeting to get the other budget, the other three budget areas, and there's also the Attorney General, who's been tied up this week with a few minor things that happened in Minneapolis. And so we will get him at a later date also, maybe at that meeting with that members. Thursday we have bills before us, so hopefully we can get through those and move on from there. So members, if there are no further questions, this meeting will be adjourned. Thank you.